a Friday edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. Welcome. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In addition to national and regional agricultural news, we'll take a look at maximizing soil quality by maximizing soil health with a feature report from Taylor Charlstrom. Also on the show here today, Kylie Harlan will have a report on the University of California Davis Strawberry Breeding Program and its upcoming field day. And the show starts off with regional ag news right after this.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
In regional agricultural news, the early spring weather in the Salinas area has been unusual, according to Mark McBride of Coastland Family Farms. He says he can't help but notice the interesting weather changes in the state lately, including cold temperatures, some rain, and imminent heat. McBride had expected to be done with a chance of frost by April 15th. However, frost was seen in cooler areas of the valley recently. He also noted that mid-April through May typically sees a gradual warming trend and some of the nicest weather in the area during the year. The forecast, though, is calling for daytime highs staying in the low 60s with gusty winds every afternoon, then a rapid warm-up into a more normal daily high into the mid-70s for several days. McBride notes that while these temperature swings may seem minor to someone who isn't in agriculture, they are not necessarily normal and production will be affected. He says that their most temperature-sensitive commodity is cauliflower, and they've already seen a significant slowing in growth and maturity, evidenced by rapidly rising market into the high teens, low 20s. Over in berries, Watsonville, California-based California Giant Director of Marketing Kyla Oberman says with cooler and overcast weather, including a few light rain events over the past 2 weeks, any damage to the strawberries that was had was very short-term. And in the long run, she says it benefited the plants more than harmed the fruit. Oberman notes that the lack of warm sunlight slows down the ripening process of strawberries, which is a contributing factor to lower daily harvest numbers than originally estimated, especially for this time of the year. She says thankfully the plants are healthy, strong, and loaded up with green fruit primed for quick ripening when the temperatures rise. She says they're expecting a warming trend to arrive that will boost harvested volumes and kickstart the next 6 to 8 weeks of large promotable supplies of strawberries. In tree fruit, Trinity Fruit Sales of Fresno, California notes that this kind of weather, even with the fluctuations, is not affecting the tree fruit. The trees are not stressed at all. What really slows things down is when the trees get really hot and then all the sugars stay in the roots to keep the tree alive. What also helps a tree stay resilient in fluctuating weather is the ample amount of chill hours they receive going into the growing season. The University of California Davis Department of Viticulture and Enology has named Dr. Luis Diaz-Garcia as an assistant professor of viticulture. He will become the newest V&E faculty member effective July 1st. He will lead the department's grape breeding program, succeeding emeritus professor and grape breeder Dr. Andy Walker, who retired in 2021 after more than 30 years at UCD. A native of Mexico, Diaz-Garcia has held a researcher position at the National Institute of Forestry, Agriculture, and Livestock Research since 2012, which is a government institution for ag research. His research there focused on the genetics and breeding of guava, a fruit native to Mexico, Central America, and the Caribbean and Northern South America. While ultra-premium and luxury wines overall are enjoying better sales growth than low-priced wines, industry analysts are watching for signs that inflation will hurt purchases by two key markets, younger adults and fine dining establishments hard hit by the pandemic. At the premium side, north of $15 a bottle, growth trends are pretty good for wine. Underneath that, especially under $12, they are not very good, and that's the bulk of the volume, differing by supplies and region, according to Danny Brager, Managing Director for Category and Consumer Insights at Napa-based industry advisory firm Azure Associates. He says 2 years ago, the lower end was actually quite good because people were pantry loading. That split between high and low end also holds for sparkling wine. As the economy continues to recover from the pandemic restrictions and consumer wariness, that gap between the two ends of the wine business spectrum is expected to narrow even further. While wine sales directly to consumers continues to be strong, though moderated from early in the pandemic, wine sold through wholesalers, mostly in the lower price tiers, is facing fierce competition from spirits and craft brew alternatives, such as hard teas, seltzers, and kombucha. That drag on sales for lower-end wines is reflected in the overall outlook for growth this year. Sales of U.S. wines are expected to be up by only 1 to 2% this year, and imports are down 5%, largely because of low inventories after pantry stuffing of flavored wines from Mexico and Canada, according to government data analyzed by John Maramarco, managing partner of beverage alcohol industry analytics firm BW166 in Santa Rosa. Spirit sales in the U.S. are on track to be up 1% this year, but that's expected to increase post-pandemic as younger consumers have been reaching for spirits more than wine. According to a survey from U.S. Apple, the total number of apples in storage on May 1st of 2022 was 58.2 million bushels, 6.2% more than last May's total of 54.8 million bushels, and 0.1% more than the five-year average for that date. Fresh apple holdings this May totaled 41.2 million bushels, 8.5% more than the inventories reported for last May. Processing holdings totaled 17 million bushels, 1% more than last year on May 1st. This report captures more than 95% of the national storage capacity.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit Phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
Up next, it's Taylor Chalstrom who visits with Dr. Carl Wyant on maximizing soil quality by maximizing soil health.
Management practices that improve soil health and soil quality have gained considerable attention over the past few years. There is a direct link between soil health, aka the living component of the soil, and soil quality, the structural component of the soil. The linkage is fungi and bacteria in the soil and the byproducts they secrete. These byproducts help restore soil structure, and well-structured soils are characterized by excellent soil health, which indicates a feedback loop between the soil biology and soil particles.
A lot of folks use soil quality and soil health interchangeably. For those sticklers that are listening to this, there are some differences. So soil quality has very broad application on your farm or your ranch. And soil quality refers to how well a soil functions physically, chemically, and biologically. And you can think about it as how well does this soil do its job? So ag soils have a particular job of producing crops, whereas a forestry soil has a job of, you know, growing trees and things like that. So you can think of how well did that soil do its job. And this is in contrast with the term soil health, which is a little more narrower in its focus, and it's a little newer too to a lot of people. But this term refers to the interaction between organisms and their environment and the soil ecosystem that's produced. And of course, this ecosystem produces ecosystem properties. And then these are things that are like, you know, nutrient cycling and water holding capacity, some of these resistance and resilience to stress. So when you think of soil health, you know, think about the life part, the biological integrity of the field. So you might think of microbial diversity and abundance, and then how that soil biology supports the plant growth.
That was Dr. Carl Wyant, former Vice President of Ag Science at Helier Ag. In order to facilitate this back-to-back between soil quality and health, the soil can be taken care of in a few ways, including feeding the soil biology, adding soil biology, utilizing mulches and compost, reducing tillage and improving soil biology, cover crops, and testing for soil biology.
You want to help your soil do its best job, which that's the measure of soil quality, a great place to start is by focusing on how alive is my soil. That's the soil health piece. So there's a couple of practices that you can use to improve your soil health, which will down the road in turn improve your soil quality. But there's a couple of practices. Feed existing biology. There's microbes in your soil that are just sitting there waiting to be fed so they can go back to work. Because they don't have a meal, they like to go dormant on us. And when you do provide them a food source, you can wake that microbiome up and restore that some of that biological integrity. You can add biology. And so a lot of folks are using inoculants, bacteria and fungi that are from other areas, bringing them to that field and using those inoculants to add biology to the soil. You can go a slightly different route. You can use mulch, compost, compost teas, and this acts as a bulk carbon and nutrient source, which can help aid the biological integrity of the field and the restoration of it. And for some other practices you can use, there's cover cropping that's becoming more popular, and this keeps living roots in the soil so that year-round you're using those roots to feed microbes and to also keep the soil covered so that there's less erosion year-round. And then one other piece is reducing the tillage. If you're thinking about trying to make a living somewhere, and if you have a life that has a constant tillage involved, constant disturbance, that's a hard way to get through life. And so what research has shown is that by reducing your tillage, and that's going to a conservation tillage or no-till in some systems, that's a great way to reduce that disturbance to the soil and help keep those microbial communities intact. Now, I've mentioned those practices as a separate sort of rows on a table here, but you can mix and match based on your system, and a lot of growers find that some sort of combination of feeding the biology and cover cropping, that might work best for them for improving their soil health and soil quality. But really, it's a case-by-case basis based on your own operation.
Another aspect to consider is knowing when your soils are poorly structured. Poorly structured soils typically have a difficult time supporting optimized crop growth due to the severe reduction in water storage capacity, low oxygen, surface crusting and seed bed issues, accumulation of salinity, and other issues.
So that soil health piece can be difficult to visualize, but soil quality, that's one that becomes much more readily apparent because you can see some of the impacts of management practices on the actual physical condition of your field. So take a shovel, go out into a field, take your best ranch, one that always performs well, gets through the drought, gets through stress easily, and just take a shovel and dig up some soil under one of your trees or vines or what have you. And you'll see that that soil quality is apparent in the fact that the soil is well aggregated. It has good crumbly granular structure. And when you have a good structure like that, it's because you have good microbial life, good soil health, sticking the soil particles together. And when you have good structure, that helps to hold your soils in place, reduce erosion. And it also helps you receive in more water from rainfall or from irrigation and store more water below ground. So you can see physically see soil quality. You can also send it off to a lab for soil health measurements and soil quality measurements. That's a good place to contact your favorite crop advisor, ask where those measurements can be done, or talk to your lab. But I want to address that question, how can poor soil quality hold a grower back? So let's just talk about that in a drought context, since we're right in the middle of one right now. Poor soil quality, if you think about a box of cake mix, like when you open up that bag that's in the box and it's full of that dry powder, if your soil looks like that, that means you don't have a whole lot of structure and a whole lot of granularity holding your, that's able to hold water and to receive water in. And that also means you don't have a whole lot of living, biological integrity and soil health to work with. So if your soil looks like that cake batter, a dry cake batter example, I think that's a good place to start just for a simple reference point. And if you do have soils like that, they can hold you back because let's just focus on the water piece. A soil that has that kind of poor structure is not able to hold on to water very well. Water will just sheet off when you irrigate and leave the field through runoff. You'll have a hard time storing water at depth you know, whether it's storing that rainfall in the winter or early spring, you won't be able to store that water, and certainly you won't have that water at depth for when you really need it in the summer when it's hot outside. So there's a lots of ways quality interacts with management practices, and really I think it starts with recognizing a field that's performing very well. Go look at that soil, grab a shovel, and look for that structure, look for that the granules, and compare it to one of your fields that maybe is not doing so well. And I think you'll see that there's some physical differences in the quality, and that's linked directly back to the biological integrity and soil health of your field.
Unsure of your navel orangeworm program? No worries now with Rango, a proven solution to protect your orchard and hull split from navel orangeworm. Rango is an OMRI-listed, broad-spectrum biopesticide with no known resistance, making it an excellent rotation and tank mix partner for both conventional and organic growers. Partner with Rango today. Contact your PCA, local dealer, or visit rangonow.com. Rango, no worries now.
In national agricultural news now, from 2007 to 2019, labor force participation rates decreased 2.6 percentage points for people aged 25 to 64 in the rural United States and 0.7 percentage points for the same age group in urban areas. The labor participation rate is the percentage of the population that is working or actively looking for work. USDA's Economic Research Service released data this week that shows the larger decrease in rural participation reflects a slower recovery in those areas after the Great Recession, which lasted from December of 2007 to June 2009. Labor force participation rates for people aged 25 to 64 decreased again from 2019 to 2020 due to the COVID-19 pandemic, but decreased less in rural counties than in urban counties. Rates declined the most from 2019 to 2020 for people aged 16 to 24 and fell the most in that age group in urban counties. In 2021, labor force participation rates for each age group remain below pre-pandemic levels in rural and urban counties. The plight of farmers facing record input costs and a war and pandemic battered global economy was front and center on Capitol Hill this week. This year is bad enough with record fuel and fertilizer costs, but USDA Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack was asked at a Senate hearing about next year.
One of the things we're looking at is whether or not there's a possibility of taking a look at our storage programs, because there may very well be the capacity to purchase and store, which farmers could potentially utilize to get them through a potentially tough 2023 crop year.
President Joe Biden just announced a doubling of funding for domestic fertilizer production. He's boosting by more than half the number of counties eligible for double cropping insurance coverage and continued help with nutrient management.
There's sensor technology that's being developed at Iowa State University that suggests that 30% of the corn acres in America today in the Midwest do not require fertilizer. So if we can accelerate the capacity of farmers to have that kind of precise information about their farms, we may be able to get them through a process, maybe not 2023, but in the future, where they're not as reliant as they have been on those inputs.
Makers were expected to complete action this week on a $40 billion Ukraine aid package, including nearly $14 billion in humanitarian help and $5 billion for global food security. On the same topic, President Joe Biden this week announced new actions to help farmers while making a visit to a Midwest farm. USDA Ag News reporter Gary Crawford.
The real reason I'm here is to thank American farmers.
President Biden visiting a Kankakee, Illinois farm Wednesday, not just to thank farmers, but also to announce some actions and proposals to help U.S. farmers increase production to help make up for the loss to the world of Ukraine's ag production. One thing that might boost U.S. output would be for more producers to double crop.
Double cropping comes with some real risks. But it's a risk we need to take.
It's so risky that in some places, if you try to grow two crops in one year, you cannot get crop insurance at all. In fact, it's only available in about 1,200 counties. However,
my administration is looking at how to extend crop insurance coverage to give financial security to farmers who practice double cropping.
Adding about 680 more counties where crop insurance would be available for farmers who double crop. Meanwhile, farmers are being hit by major price hikes for fertilizer. Earlier this year, USDA pledging $250 million to boost U.S. fertilizer production. President Biden says he'll double that. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Tractor sales declined in April for the second month in a row, according to the Association of Equipment Manufacturers. U.S. total farm tractor sales fell 22.3% in April compared to 2021. Total farm tractor sales are now down 13.7% year to date. Supply chain remains the number one difficulty for member manufacturers, according to Kurt Blades of AEM. The Foundation for Food and Agriculture Research, in collaboration with a Kroger company, Zero Hunger, Zero Waste Foundation, has announced a food waste challenge. The challenge aims to develop an original, innovative methodology for quantitative measurement for food waste generated in U.S. households. Objective quantitative measurements would provide an accurate picture of the sources of food waste and benefit efforts to reduce this waste across the food system. U.S. household food waste is likely underestimated. Traditionally, multiple methods have been used to track household food waste, including surveys or specialized applications. However, the methods are inconsistent and use different understandings of food waste. Additional research is critical to reducing food waste and supporting interventions, requiring original approaches to gathering accurate and standardized measurements. Applications are due by July 13th. Each grantee may receive up to $1 million. The Food Waste Challenge webpage includes more information about this funding opportunity and instructions on how to apply. Wholesale prices in the U.S. continue to hover around 40-year highs as problems with the supply chain, labor, the pandemic, and the war in Ukraine continue to cause inflation. The U.S. Labor Department released April figures recently, which shows its producer price index, which measures supply conditions, increased a seasonally adjusted 0.5% in April from March. On a 12-month basis, April prices rose 11% from last year and marked the fifth straight year of double-digit gains over 2021. The fresh fruit and melons category posted an unadjusted 17.3% rise from April of 2021 to 2022, an 8.5% increase from March to April of 2022. Fresh and dry vegetables were up 45.7% from April of 2021 to 2022, but prices fell 26.6% from March to April of 2022. Energy prices in April rose 1.7% from March to April, which was lower than the previous month's 6.4% gain, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics report. Likewise, transportation and warehousing rose 3.6% in April from March, lower than last month's 5.7% increase. The energy relief may be short-lived, as in May, gas prices are on the rise again, hitting an all-time high. Diesel also hit a record high.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, delivering value to growers and handlers with advocacy, research programs, Walnut Promotions, doing more together.
Kylie Harlan is up next, where she reports on the University of California Davis Strawberry Breeding Program and an upcoming field day.
California is responsible for about 85% of the strawberries grown and sold in the United States. Since the 1930s, the Strawberry Breeding Program at UC Davis has had an instrumental role in the development and growth of the industry.
One of the key drivers of the program over the years has been innovation in yield, and it's driven increases in yields over the years from the 60s on. And part of that has also been driven by developing a flowering type and fruiting type that is known as a day neutral strawberry, and that allows strawberries to be grown through the summer during the long days of summer. Traditionally, strawberries were what we consider a short day, or June bearing was the name often used over the years for strawberries. And it was a very small window of time of when strawberries were available. And so that day neutral trait has driven the yields higher because of that, the ability of that plant to produce fruit during any day length of light and growing through the summer. So the other key component that we have, you know, added to the strength of the program of yield and flowering types is we wanted to increase disease resistance. The critical reason for that is a lot of the tools that were used to mitigate a lot of the soil-borne diseases that can impact strawberry production have been affected by the loss of tools like methyl bromide, which is a fumigant that is now no longer used by the growers because it's been outlawed. And so developing disease-resistant cultivars has become more important. So that's looking at several diseases in particular, most of them root-borne diseases, Fusarium wilt, Phytophthora, and a disease called charcoal rot or Macrophemina are the key targeted diseases we've focused on. And so that has been our initial big push in our research.
That was Glenn Cole, a staff research associate for the UC Davis Strawberry Breeding Program. He said that Fusarium wilt has recently become an issue in many of the growing regions due to the phase out of methyl bromide. However, UC Davis has been working hard to combat this issue and has recently developed cultivars that are resistant to this disease. On June 1st, UC Davis will host a field day so growers can see what the program has been working on. The field day will showcase day-neutral products as well as improvements made in taste, sweetness, and aroma. Cole said that all of the products at the field day are fusarium resistant.
This field day, we'll be focused on talking about the day neutrals that we grow, and that's what's grown in the Watsonville area. Again, those types of strawberries that will produce fruit through the summer. So generally, those day neutrals in that growing region will start harvesting in March, and they'll harvest all the way through October, which, again, the crop is grown mostly as an annual type crop, and things are replanted in the fall. So growers will get fruit in this particular region from about March through October. Within the day neutral zone of product development, you can see a range of flowering time. There are day neutrals that come on a little bit earlier and then tend to drop off in the summer. They still yield in the summer, but they drop off. So there's a range of flowering times from very early day neutrals to the more common day neutrals, which tend to start yielding in May and June and then through the summer. And so in that set of five, we'll have an array of selections that address kind of that early, mid, and late day neutral types. So anyways, that's our discussion there will be about those particular selections that we're planning to potentially come forward with. And again, we're looking at maintaining yield with disease resistance to this fusarium. And at the same time, you know, our third pillar of research has really been also directed towards improving the consumer traits, which is flavor, sweetness, aroma. And so as we bring forward new products, we're looking to have ones that are enhanced for those particular traits. And so, you know, so we have these field days, we have an opportunity for everybody to see the data that we present and talk about the selections. And then everybody has opportunities to see what they look like, taste them, et cetera. So we're pretty excited about the new selections coming forward. And we anticipate in the fall, early winter of this coming year of releasing probably another 2 to 3 varieties. All will be fusarium resistant.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcast, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews, and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.